Why do I like the 1966 Batman as the ultimate crime fighter? This has been your question, and I know you've been wanting to ask me that. I anticipate this, and I'm ready for an answer for you, because it has to do with what we're doing here in this day of fighting the apostasy. It's because this guy, Batman of 1966 fame, was so cool. He never got flustered. He conducted himself as a gentleman, even while he's vanquishing the likes of the Riddler, the Joker, the Penguin, even Catwoman. Although Catwoman almost got the better of him. Well, you know why. Yeah. She was Catwoman. And Batman had almost fell for it. Several episodes, man. She had him on the ropes, but he even vanquished her. And he did it as a gentleman. And that's what I like about the 1966 Batman, as opposed to the movies, the dark movies today, violence, cars exploding. This 1966 Batman, played by Adam West, he didn't need all that. He didn't need all the fuss and the bother. So we are undoing the work of the adversary, but we are doing it in control of ourselves. We are not blowing up cars. We are not engaged in civil disobedience. We are not at peace while we're doing this. I'll speak for myself. I try to maintain my composure even while I'm destroying the likes of the Pentecostal movement, the likes of preterists, which I would equate to the Joker, the Pentecostal movement, that's the Joker. The preterists, that's the Penguin. That's all you can do. When you hear that people think that the kingdom already came in 70 AD, which means we're living on the new heavens and the new earth, that's all you can say. You can just laugh like the Penguin. And we're fighting things like Arminianism and the other crazy thing where people believe that God predestines people to hell. Calvinism. I equate Calvinism to the Riddler, because it's a riddle how God purposely brings people into the world to torment them for eternity. So, love Batman here. Robin was useless. He was completely useless. Batman tried to make him feel good. He threw him once in a while, gave him a little something to do, go get coffee, and he just got into trouble that he had to get rescued from. So, he was non-essential, all right, but he's cute. He's got that little R on his coat. Now, we're going to look at the pre-exile prophets, and I almost envy these people because they saw a very simple picture. They did not see two comings of Christ. They saw one compact coming of Christ, and prophecy would be so neat and clean if the pre-exile prophets were right. But it's as though you're looking through the telescope, these prophets were, of history, and they only see so much. Now, the whole thing is there. Right? Because God knows the end from the beginning. So God knows everything. But he's giving these individuals a limited powered telescope. And the people I'm talking about, you can't blame them. It's not their fault. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, and our friend Habakkuk, who some people say Habakkuk. And again, I can't help those people. If they want to say Habakkuk, that's their problem. To me, it's Habakkuk. And of course, Zephaniah. So, it was as though, you know when you're looking at a distant scene, like let's say you're looking at a mountain, and there's another mountain behind it. Now, and I used to see this when I was in Colorado. The mountain behind the mountain, there might be 100 miles in between those two mountains. But if you're looking at it from a distance, the mountains look transposed. It's almost like a composite photograph. It looks like they're one on top of the other. That's exactly what the way that these pre-exile prophets. Now, when I say pre-exile, I mean those prophets who prophesied to Judah in the days before the Babylonian exile. And for some reason, prophecy is divided between pre-exile, post-exile. Don't know why that bad things are always the centerpiece of Israel's history. Again, because more bad things than good things happen to Israel. So they're seeing a very fuzzy picture. And they don't discriminate between the parousia, that is the presence of Christ in humiliation, and the parousia of Christ in glory. They see it happening at the same time. Wouldn't that be neat and clean? Jesus comes, he suffers for his people, he dies, he raises, and bang, there's the kingdom. And so they have these two great time periods. This is every one of these prophets that I just named, to a man. This is universally true of all of them. They only see two great time periods, and the bisecting epoch between these two being the personal self-revelation of Jesus Christ in humiliation and glory at the same time. Well, wouldn't that be great? And that's what they were all looking for. So you really can't blame people in Israel if they weren't up to date with their prophets. People today have the same problem. They don't look at what the prophets said lately. So people in Jesus' day thinking, right? Most people in Jesus' day thought that his coming, he was going to restore the kingdom to Israel. Especially, well, they wanted him to come as the white horse, political Messiah. He didn't. He died, but then he rose again. That was good news. Hey, Jesus is alive again. Now, it seems like the Sanhedrin are on the run. Peter is speaking eloquently concerning the times of refreshing and that the kingdom's ready to come. But if they had known their post-exile prophets, they would have known that there was going to be an intervening time period between the humiliation and the glory. But that didn't come till later. And I'm going to talk about that tomorrow. So they only saw a composite photo. You can't blame Israel's heart because all they want is to vanquish their enemies. That's why the apostles, the disciples asked Jesus before he returns to heaven, it's almost like, where are you going? Aren't you at this time restoring the kingdom to Israel? Because, you know, he was going back to heaven, and that's a dangerous thing. And when Jesus goes back to heaven, it's like, uh-oh. The kingdom's not here yet, and where's Jesus going? And Jesus said, it's not yours to know the times and the seasons. So even the disciples, these epic, elegant names that we know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Luke wasn't a disciple. But they want to know. But even they did not know the intervening times. So you can sort of excuse them. You can sort of excuse them because some of their prophets did teach one coming of Messiah, and it's all going to happen during the same little stay here on earth. He's going to suffer, rise, and then kick ass. Who wouldn't want that? It seems ridiculous to delay it, to delay the kingdom. That seems ridiculous. And yet some of the prophets saw it. Now, I think it's kind of cool that in Luke 4, we've talked about this before. This is what I mean by those pre-exile prophets saw one thing. And some people today see one thing. And some people today don't see anything. So we're going to rectify this. We're going to do the Batman thing. And we're going to do it calmly and coolly, gentlemanly. We're not going to need Robin. And we're going to blow up the villains. Jesus picked up the scroll one day in Nazareth, where he was reared, and according to his custom, on the day of the Sabbath, he entered into the synagogue, and he rose to read. And handed to him was a scroll of the prophet Isaiah. Hey, that's one of the guys we just talked about, pre-exile prophet. And opening the scroll, he found the place where it was written. He's reading Isaiah now, from Isaiah chapter 61, verses 1 and 2. The Spirit of the Lord is on me, on account of which he anoints me to bring the evangel to the poor. He has commissioned me to heal the crushed heart, to herald to captives a pardon, and to the blind the receiving of sight, to dispatch the oppressed with a pardon, to herald an acceptable year of the Lord. And he closes the scroll, rolls it up at that point. That's what the scroll sounded like. And he stopped in the middle of a sentence. He stopped at a comma. The very next phrase was, and the day of vengeance of our Elohim. So in other words, if you would have kept reading, this is what he would have said. It's a herald, an acceptable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance for our Elohim. But he stopped at a comma. And he rolled up the scroll. But Isaiah doesn't stop. You see, when Isaiah is writing it, he's one of the pre-exile prophets. So as he's writing this, he goes right on through it. Zing! To herald an acceptable year of the Lord and a day of vengeance for our Elohim. So if you were a student of Isaiah, and it's like Isaiah was your boy, you know, and all the, I'm sure people in Israel that day, they had their favorite prophets. You know, they had trading cards and they had posters. I have posters of Batman here, but they had posters of Isaiah. That's our prophet Isaiah. He says that he's going to herald an acceptable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance. And the day of vengeance right afterwards. It's like seeing those two mountains. And it's like, well, they look smack dab against each other. No, there's 100 miles between those mountains. And in the case of this prophecy, of what Jesus is reading at the synagogue, there's 2,000 years at least between these two mountains. The mountain of the parousia of his humiliation and the mountain of the parousia of his coming, returning in glory to kick Rome out and to establish the kingdom and the day of vengeance, which we're looking at in the unveiling of Jesus Christ. So yeah, I'm giving a pass to some people, but not totally, because I'm sorry, but there are other prophets besides Isaiah. There are, for instance, the prophets of the exile and the post-exile. Next, we're going to look at these prophets.